Hello and welcome everyone to this very first YPI podcast. I'm here today with Nevena, who will speak about her experience as a young peace builder. Welcome, Nevena.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us. So why don't we start off by a little introduction. Who are you and what kind of work you do?
Surely. So my name is Nevena Radosavljević, and originally I'm coming from Balkans, from ex-Yugoslavian region. This is always complicated there. And also what I am doing, it's actually involved in academia. So I am doing my PhD at Ludwig Maximilians University in Munich with a focus on peace building process in Kosovo and the role of civil society organization. But from the other side, I'm also a practitioner in peace building and reconciliation, meaning I'm doing trainings in peace building, conflict resolution, conflict transformation, reconciliation, etc.
Okay, thanks so much for this brief introduction. And I'm actually so interested in it because I don't know much about the field myself. So I think you prepared a little presentation, talk a little bit about your expertise, the kind of work you do. And I think we're really curious to hear a little bit more about this and dive deeper into this.
Yes, definitely. So what I would like to start with is definitely reconciliation. As I will show you in one of my nice to call them infographics, it's like what reconciliation should be. So the main thing with reconciliation is that there is no exact definition what reconciliation should mean, what it actually means. Usually it's still quite a part of philosophical questions. In some points it also goes to theology, but in terms of what I do, there are like small insights, what is it, small definitions, how it should be approached, etc. So there is this practitioner in reconciliation and peace building called John Paul Lederach, and he's actually the father of reconciliation in terms of how we are using it nowadays in peace studies and peace practices. So what he said is actually that reconciliation, it's one huge process that actually includes four elements, and these four elements are peace, justice, mercy, and truth. And the reconciliation is a place where all these four meet together. So because also, like, if we look in these elements, and like I also made this sunflower, so it shows actually how they are all interconnected. If we think about them, it's still a question, okay, what peace means, what justice means, what mercy means, what truth means. So it's still quite philosophical, it's still quite questionable. But in the end of the day, when we try to merge it a bit, to put it in a more understandable level, then we would say that mercy, it's actually a big and a huge concept that would actually include compassion, that would include healing, that would include empathy, which are super important part of reconciliation processes. That then peace means, so to say, well-being of one and another. Justice would mean the human rights education. It would focus on respecting of human rights. It would be about just society, etc. And the end, the truth would also focus on acknowledgement, on dealing with the past, etc., etc. So this is the, so to say, the big scope of reconciliation and what it can be. And I know it's somehow quite tricky, because still it's on philosophical level. And what I've tried to do in my research, in my academic research, is actually to dig more, to figure out what this reconciliation should be. So if you have any question, you just stop me. I know that I am super eager to talk a lot about this, because I'm passionate about it. But you feel free to stop me, no? And say like, okay, I don't get it here. So what I actually tried to do in some point is actually to figure out more, like to put it on a, this basic level reconciliation process, so I can understand what is it, and somebody who never knew about it or who never read about it, to understand it as well. So what I did, it's in this process of researching, is that I came to one, so to say, more precise definition what reconciliation process can be. And I also made one infographic about it. I hope people will like it because I really enjoyed making it. So I'm proud of this one. So first important thing to say is that reconciliation is a process now. It's long. It cannot be precisely said like, oh, this is where it starts and this is where it ends, because it includes many elements and it's long, and also really important, it's different depending on the cases. So in this, in terms of this, how better to explain it, usually during my trainings, when I'm having a session on reconciliation, I try to put it on a super human level, because it can happen that many of us cannot relate with the conflict, that we don't come from the conflict zones, we never been to any conflict zones. So whenever I talk about reconciliation, I say, okay, imagine that you broke up with somebody, no? So we all of us experienced that. So we had two persons that have been in a relationship, and then at some point they broke up. So what happens, how to reconcile these two sides? So it starts with something that it's called relationship building. And many of practitioners and scholars are actually saying that relationship building or rebuilding of relationship is the most important thing in reconciliation. So what would that mean for this couple that broke up? So how they can rebuild their relationship? I always say like small things are important. So let's say that these two people, these two conflict sides, will just go for a coffee. It's enough. I mean, I put coffee as an example because for me, coffee is important, no? But I would say like, yes, okay, they will go for a coffee and this is how it starts. There is already some relation, something is happening. So it's positive. Definitely it can bring to the reconciliation. So what would happen next in order two of them to reconcile after everything that happened? It's acknowledgement of the past. So to actually to say to each other to what happened, and that this past was painful, was stressful, was harming, and also in many cases was traumatic. Because this is something that is really important for the reconciliation process, is dealing with trauma. And also it can happen in any case, in a big violent armed conflict, it can happen also in a relationship and people get traumatized. So it's really important to acknowledge that somebody suffered, mm-hmm. that somebody been through really hard time. And when you say it out loud and it's accepted from the other side, it means a lot in this process of healing. And what is also part of this trauma, it's usually we as humans, we tend to measure it. So if I broke up with somebody, I would say, yeah, I suffered more than you, which is hard to say because I don't know how much the other person suffered or the other side of the conflict suffered. So that's why this acknowledgement is super important part of it. Then when this is done, then we go to the third component of reconciliation, which is called sharing experience. So what should be done here is to share this common mutual experience of suffering. So to go through the story that is usually really hard, but to say it out loud and to express it and to accept it that it happened to. It's really linked to the acknowledgement, but still another thing. After sharing this, the most the usual step that comes after that is mutual acceptance. So to accept that the other person suffered, that the other person been through trauma, that the other person needs healing, but also to accept ourselves, that to say that like, okay, we are also the part of this, we suffered, we've been to trauma and we need this healing. And again, this healing is super important because it's something that we have to take care of or it doesn't matter in what kind of conflict we are in. So this is super, super important. And what would come next after acceptance is change of perception. Usually when we are in a conflict, we think that we make this differentiation, no? So there is us and there is the other. So usually what we say, it's like, okay, the other is bad, I am good, no? So this is where this perception is changing. It's where us empathy is rising, where empathy starts playing the role to say, okay, this other person suffered as well and I accept it. And at the end, what comes as a final step in reconciliation is collective future. This collective future doesn't have to be, okay, again, if we talk about relationship, no, the broken relationship, it doesn't have to mean that two persons who broke up have to be friends, best friends. Now they spend every day together, of course not, but it can mean that they peacefully co-live, no? They don't hate each other. They don't think bad of each other. They accept each other as they are. And collective future would mean, okay, maybe in a few months we will have a coffee together and it's going to be fine. Or when we meet each other on the street, we can say hi. So there is this peaceful co-living that follows. And I mean, all of these things are super important. They can happen in different periods, no? And all of them are crucial for reconciliation as that. And also they, as I said, like none of the conflicts is the same. And that's why there is no reconciliation process that can be copy-pasted. It's always different.
I think this was really great. And it was a great brief overview from someone who really, you know this field and you know what this is about. So I think this was really interesting. Also the use of the analogy, I think this is just something that helps people to just kind of, as you said, people who have not experienced a conflict like this, to understand this a bit better and to get an idea of what it's like, of what reconciliation means and how complex and difficult these processes are.
Exactly. I mean, this is why I'm always saying it's really hard to relate to the conflict that you never took part or you never saw or you never followed. It's really hard to understand it. So I always do prefer to put it on personal level and to give an example that is actually that we all can relate to.
Yeah, I think this was super helpful. So thanks for that. You said you also did your bachelor degree in peace journalism, right?
Well, actually, I did my bachelor degrees in journalism.
Okay.
And it was at the Faculty of Political Sciences in Belgrade. And it was done like that half of my program was about political sciences and the half about journalism, but still I graduated with the major of journalism.
Okay.
And since after that, I started studying peace studies and did my master's in peace studies, I actually found that there is a connection between journalism and peace.
I'm really intrigued to hear a little bit about this, and maybe you can just kind of summarize why this connection is so important and what this connection means for you between peace journalism and reconciliation now as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, first of all, what I would say that peace studies as that, it's not a field itself. It's a multidisciplinary field.
Yeah.
It's a mixture of so many fields and it can be connected literally to anything because this is, so to say, something that is bigger than all of the other fields, and it can be done on personal level, on interpersonal, on national, international. So it's really quite broad field. So also journalism is that it's connected to peace, of course. So first time when I heard about it, I was like, peace journalism, what's that? And what that can be, because it's like also, it was for me as a already like graduated journalist, like, okay, how you can mix this? But actually then I really fell in love with it. So peace journalism is a concept that was developed by also called father of peace studies, Jochen Galtung. And he introduced it in the 70s when he was actually trying to answer on all the war correspondence and all the conflicts in the world. So how to actually report them in a peaceful way. And how it, I will give you more insights on it, just like how it's connected to reconciliation. I find it as a tool to foster reconciliation and peace building. So definitely it can be observed like that. And peace journalism is that. I will show you one more infographic. I'm completely into this, obviously.
Video.
First of all, what he says, there is a difference between peace and conflict journalism from one side, and from another side, war and violence journalism. And what is important to say is that this is the method how to do journal, how to report. No, this is not, this shouldn't be mixed with a war correspondence, because definitely this is not what I'm talking about here. This is a method how to use journalism to foster peace building and peace. So what he says that, like, first, there are four components of this peace journalism, peace and conflict journalism. First one, it's that they are peace and conflict oriented. What that means? So that means that there are, that we should observe and report from one conflict, observing it with complete historical and cultural insight from all the sides that are involved mm-hmm. in the conflict. Yeah. So this is, it's really emphasized this, that it shouldn't be one-sided to say like, okay, this side it's a good one and this one is a bad one. No, it should present all the sides and why they entered this conflict, no? And why this conflict escalated. So it's definitely giving a voice to all the parties of the conflict. And it's proactive, so it actually involves also journalists who is giving the story. And what I find the most important here is humanization. This is for me the crucial part of peace journalism. So to humanize everybody who is taking part in this conflict, because armed conflict as that tends to dehumanize. This is how massive killings and like genocides are happening. It comes to dehumanization, and what this approach towards journalism, peace journalism, is emphasizing is this humanization of all participants, no? So it's quite important part of it. What is the next component, next element of peace journalism is it's truth oriented. Many would ask here, okay, this is too much. Truth is still super philosophical. How you can judge what is truth, what is not? Of course, it's not about it. It's like exposing untruths of all the sides, because during the conflict there is a lot of propaganda, there is a lot of fake news, etc., etc. So the point is to expose all the sides that they are either lying or saying lies, etc., and to uncover all cover-ups of the conflict, so to say. Then it's people-oriented, which is the third component according to Galtung. So what that means, it's like it focuses on victims. It focuses on all victims, on the all boats, or like it doesn't matter how many sides of the conflict there are. And it shows the victims and the suffering and what's happening to the people who are suffering from this conflict. And what is important here, it's to present the voices of people who are not heard, especially these grassroots level peacemakers. So this is also what means that it's people oriented, which, like, if we compare it, as you can see on this table that I prepared, that like war oriented journalism would be focused on elites. So and also differentiating our victims and their victims. Victims are victims. I mean, so this is what peace journalism is focused on. And at the fourth element that Galtung is mentioning, it's solutions oriented. So it's not, this type of reporting and journalism, peace journalism, it's trying to give solutions, but solutions that are not non-violent. So this is the main point of it, to give away how to resolve a conflict on a creative and non-violent way, how to come to the peace that is on using the way that is non-violent. So it's really crucial part of it also. And there is also something that has been added later on, like that Galtung didn't mention in his four elements, crucial elements of peace journalism, it's gender. that appeared later on, that it says that peace journalism is gender aware. So it takes care of gender balance and gender representation. If you ask me how to do this in practice, because also all of this sounds like, okay, I will tell you some theory and this is how it is. No. The point is, like, this is also the point, as I said to you in the beginning, I am not just a researcher. I'm a researcher. I'm not only in academia. I'm trying to put it all together because, I mean, for me, in any other way, it wouldn't make sense. So how this would work in practice, what I'm trying to do, it's when I write, because I'm still working as a freelance journalist. Two things that I'm always using is humanization. So to put every story on human level, it doesn't matter what's happening on political level, on international political level, regional, national, I'm always asking how this situation affects daily life of people. So this is my main question. And besides that, it's to every problem, what I'm also trying to foster, that every problem should be resolved non-violently. So this is, I think it's always a matter of practice and how to do it. But just, I would say, for everybody who would like to try how this peace journalism works, is just to ask ourselves or ask this question, how one problem affects just an ordinary human. So, and I think the answer comes itself.
Wow, thank you so much. I think that was really something quite new for me as well, the whole idea of peace journalism. And I think it's just really, you put this in a really clear and simple way for me to understand, and I hope also to our listeners.
I hope so.
Really interesting. And I also just to tell our listeners that we will also provide some information on our website, which I will give through later. If they have any questions for you, they could also reach out maybe, or read more about the theory. We can give provide some links.
Definitely, definitely.
Because this is something I feel like to read on more and to learn more about. Is there anything else that you wanted to share before we go into the last section of this podcast?
Well, like, I would say too many things, but then it's going to be too long because I'm trying to be focused and precise. So yes, I'm good.
I know the difficulty. Well, I to help you a little bit with that, I have a few questions for you prepared that you can briefly answer. And to end this podcast on. So the first one, the first thing I'm curious to hear from you is, why do you think that we need more young people included in peace processes? What's the benefit of young people?
There are, I would say, many benefits, no? But to start from, I think it's also included, definitely it is, in the UN resolution on peace, security and youth, when they emphasize this, that youth can actually play a crucial role on grassroots level. So I would definitely agree about this because, you know, there are many aspects on peace building and reconciliation. And again, there is this pyramid of levels of society and how they affect the peace building process. And in this pyramid, there is this grassroots level, which is the biggest, it actually covers the biggest part of society, which are like ordinary people living in a conflict zone or in any country. So I would say that, like, that this is for me really crucial, that youth can actually play crucial role in this grassroots level of society. So I would definitely emphasize this. But also to come to that this practitioner and researcher whom I mentioned, Jean-Paul Lederach, I'm obviously super obsessed with him because I really like his work and his approach. So he was actually explaining this, how the peace building is built, how peace is built up, no?
Yeah.
And then he's giving he's asking this question, how important critical mass is. And then he says, like, okay, let's compare it to the baking of bread, no? So he says, like, okay, what are the ingredients that you put in this bread? So you put flour, you put salt, you put sugar, some water, and yeast, no? And then he asked, okay, like the smallest amount of all of these ingredients is yeast, definitely, but it's crucial for baking bread, because like from this smallest part, everybody has a chance to grow. And this is also where I see youth. Yeah. So like, it's important to have them, because I think they can bake this bread of peace building to be the yeast of society. So yeah, for me, I think like all of these together, I would definitely say it's a crucial role in peace building.
That is a super nice picture to paint. Really good. Next one. We're just going to go through the questions.
Tell me.
What advice would you give to someone who now wants to start working in the field? So a young peace builder who's really eager to get started in the field of peace building.
to start doing it, definitely, because this is also really important in terms of we need people who are active in peace building. We need people who are somehow related to the field, because also what I said, like peace is that, and peace building, it's super multidisciplinary and it covers different fields. So therefore I would say like anything that's connected to it and that somehow involves peace in the work, it's super important. So I would definitely say go for it. It's important. And also for the people who are eager to start to do it and to start working on peace building, I would also say not to give up, because I think it's really hard now. Sometimes, many times you get judged by your society, you get judged by many other people. Why you are trying to communicate with the other side of the conflict, and then you're a betrayer, and then you are silly. Also, many times when we talk about peace and peace building, many people you would ask, are you hippie or what? So it's like there are many misinterpretations, and I would say it's hard. So not to give up, for sure, because it makes sense. It really gives result, and most of all, it's important. So please don't give up.
I think that's a really good advice. Another one, who or what inspired you to do what you're doing now? Was there a specific moment or a person or something that you read?
I think the list is quite long here. Well, I would say it started for me. So as I told you, I did my bachelor's degree in journalism and political sciences. And then I was thinking, okay, I should go for my master's, where I should go. And in that moment, I was super lucky to be selected for one program of the Council of Europe called Youth Peace Camp. So I took a part there as a group of Serbs coming from Kosovo. And then actually they put us in dialogue with Albanians in that moment, and for me it wasn't my first meeting, a chance to meet them, but still I went through this reconciliation process in a few days, and it was amazing. It was eye-opening for me. And what actually inspired me there the most is people, because it wasn't only about Serbs and Albanians there. There were like people coming from different conflict zones all around Europe. So I really got inspired by stories, by that, how people are eager to change something, to bring some peaceful co-living in their societies, etc. So I think this is definitely how it started. Then after that, I decided, okay, I will go for my master's in peace building. And here I am now, like I would say it's 4 years after that. So already doing my PhD in peace studies, working as a trainer in peace building and conflict transformation. So this is how it started. And I would say this is what motivates me today. It's people with whom I work, people whom I meet in these trainings, usually these stories that you hear in this reconciliation and dialogue projects are really hard, and people are really in some point traumatized and etc. So when you hear them and then you see this eagerness to change something, I think this is amazing. For me, this is the most motivational part, that I am listening to this and I see how ready they are to change it and to forgive to the other side. So I would say this is definitely the biggest part of my motivation. And also people with whom I work, how ready they are to bring something new. But I mean, if I have to also, if I have to say, like, to have a specific thing that I read and that changed me and that helped me realize, I would come back to this practitioner, Jean-Paul Lederach, that really his books helped me to understand it all better, because he was working a lot on conflict resolution all over the world, from Colombia to Tajikistan, Nepal, etc. So, and he was giving these stories actually from the ground, how people were able to reconcile among themselves even though they were in a conflict until yesterday, so to say. So all of this mixture, I think that motivation is there.
I think this is a really nice answer and a really good connection also to our last question, which is, which goal are you currently working towards to? What's your, what's a big goal that you focus on?
Well, I think I can also like level them somehow. So on my personal level, there is also this saying that people in conflict transformation and peace building are not seeking for the question what they do in their job, but they are actually trying to answer who they are in in this work they do. No, so on my personal level, I would still seek for this. So this is one of the goals. But if I dream big, what are my goals? I would say to foster peace building and reconciliation process in the Balkans, because as I said, I'm coming from there, and also I do remember the conflict, and also conflict affected my generation highly. So my big dream is to bring something to the reconciliation process in next Yugoslavia, and to see these people actually living peacefully together. And also one of my big goals and big dreamings is to have peace education as a part of official school curricula.
Okay.
Because I think this would be super important for the next generations to learn about it from the very beginning. Because peace education nowadays is a choice. It's part of non-formal education. You can go later on in for masters or any kind of programs in peace studies. But like, I think it's really important to teach new generations from the very beginning what peace is. And also I think this, I saw this example in Sweden, they introduce empathy for primary school or for kindergarten as a part of curricula. So I found it so amazing.
Absolutely. Yeah, thank you so much. Now we're almost at the end of this conversation. I think this was really inspiring. It kind of opened my eyes to a whole different side of peace building as well. And I hope also for our listeners. Thank you for joining us today, Nivina. And for our listeners, we have more information on this on our website, which is youthpeaceinitiative.net, or on our Instagram, which is ypi.official. If you have any questions for Nivina or for us, feel free to get in touch, and hopefully see you soon. And thank you so much, Nivina, for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
Of course.
It was my pleasure.